Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Tom Morks, a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces that's gone on to build a very successful, well-diversified online business for himself. After graduating from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, Tom went out on deployment in the Middle East. After a while, though, Tom started to feel this nagging in the back of his head, a calling that he could find a more meaningful career outside of the military one day. So, when his tour was up, Tom returned to ordinary civilian life and started laying the foundation for a business that would soon grow to include writing, self-publishing, podcasting, online courses, and consulting for entrepreneurs like John Lee Dumas, Neil Patel, Seth Godin, and more. All of this, mind you, in the span of just a few short years. In this episode, Tom and I talk about how he's built a powerful reputation for himself as the go-to product launch expert that's helped dozens of the world's top online entrepreneurs with releasing books, podcasts, SaaS tools, and more. We go into one of his own deepest passions, writing, and how he's leveraged crowdfunding campaigns to launch many of his own books that have earned well into the tens of thousands of dollars each. We dig into how Tom cultivates such a driven entrepreneurial mindset for himself, the ways he stays disciplined and productive, his advice to all of you side hustlers out there, and more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Tom Morks. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Ryan.
I'm pumped to finally dig into this conversation. It's been a long time in the making. And the first question I want to ask you is one that I've been asking everyone here on the show. So, Tom, what book are you reading right now, or what's been a favorite of yours recently?
12 Rules for Life by Dr. Jordan Peterson. Hands down, one of the best books I've read in a while. And I'm just a voracious consumer of everything he teaches. Are you familiar with him?
I'm not. No, I'm scrambling to jot this down.
So there's gonna be like 10% of the audience, maybe more. I haven't actually done the statistics or measured this just yet, but probably 10% of your audience that will just hate me for referencing that. But I think like a good 30, 50% will just be like, if they know who I'm talking about, they'll be like, I completely agree. But he teaches, he's a university professor, University of Toronto, teaches on, and he teaches these ideas around Piaget and Freud and a lot of the constructionists and different psychological ideas around there. And this idea of, well, one of his first books was Maps of Meaning, which is also very good, but that's like a more technical book. But 12 Rules for Life is kind of, I feel like it's the same ideas brought down to something more easily consumable. So a lot of it's like how story and narrative and the hero's journey and these archetypes impact our lives. Sounds simple. I think it's truly profound, and it's just really powerful stuff. So I highly recommend it.
Okay, that is on my list. That's all the recommendation I need.
Boom.
So Tom, I want to talk about you. I know you're based in Colorado these days, but where are you originally from?
I was born in the Chicagoland area and then went to high school in Michigan, West Michigan, and then went to college in New York, West Point, and then joined the Army after that. So I've lived everywhere. And well, I've lived in many locations around the United States. And then to make things worse or better, however you want to look at it, after I got out of the Army in 2013, my wife and I, we traveled around the world. What ended up being going on 2 years straight doing that. We just intended to maybe do it for a few months, but I started doing this whole online blogging thing that, you know, this podcasting thing, like the stuff we're going to talk about today. And it really took off, and that afforded us the opportunity to just travel around the world, which is something I've always wanted to do. So I've lived in many locations now.
Damn, that's awesome. So you unpacked a lot there, but I want to take a quick step back. Yeah. So you mentioned you attended West Point, the U.S. Mm-hmm. Military Academy. So what led you to originally pursuing, I guess, what at the time could have been a career in the military?
Yeah, it was, it had to have been just something, maybe just some disposition of mine growing up. I don't know if it was, you know, genetic disposition or if it was influenced by external factors to some degree. Obviously my family are, you know, patriotic and we, you know, have a history of, or at least my grandfathers were, you know, served in World War II. But my dad served for a short bit of time, but it wasn't like, we weren't like a military family per se, but I guess we've always respected the military. So I've always respected the military. And when my brother, oldest brother, was looking to go to college, he was applying, he found the Naval Academy and West Point, the United States Military Academy. And he applied to both. And it was kind of an unwritten rule, or it was actually maybe a written rule. It was like, we're not going to pay for college. Well, like my parents, I mean, they actually couldn't, right? So there's no money there, but there was always this emphasis on education and, you know, pursuing the, you know, the best school you could. Like that was like deeply ingrained, which is kind of funny because I'm kind of like anti-college now, but like my parents were like deeply, like they were like, go to the best college, but you got to pay for it yourself. So you kind of get paid to go to them. So he applied, he ended up getting in to, he applied to both those. He ended up scrapping Naval Academy for whatever reason, which is kind of weird, but ended up going to the United States Military Academy. And I flew with him when I was in fifth grade, I think it was. Yeah, fifth grade, I flew with him to campus and I walked around with him. And I was like, at fifth grade, I was like, I want to go here. That was it. I just walked around. I just saw it. It was, yeah, man. So it was like, you know, you think about that. It's like, I don't think most kids have a vision of what they're going to be doing at, you know, what? Geez, 10 plus years from now kind of thing. Like it's not the same time horizon, same timetable. It's like usually you're concerned with like maybe what's going to happen in the next month. But it was like something just snapped for me. I was like, this is what I want to do. And then what's interesting is that definitely dictated like a lot of the things that I ended up doing were to get into West Point because obviously it's like hyper competitive. And, you know, and so I was like, I was just really like disciplined about doing the things I needed to do to make sure I could get in, which was like from freshman year of high school. Like obviously you have to crush it academically, but then you have to do sports. So I was doing like three sports a year. Then you have to do things like in, you know, like the, not political, but I did like, you know, student government type stuff. Like I was the class president or the president of my school, actually my senior year, like the whole school, which is kind of weird. They got rid of that later, but you know, I did those kind of things. I was part of like boys, what is it? Not the Boy Scouts, but it was something like, it was, you know, all these different things that were like integrated into like the local, like working with like the local congressman, things like that. Plus like I had a couple jobs, you know, it was just like everything I was doing. I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to avoid getting rejected, you know, and then we'll see how it plays out. And so I was like, you know, fortunate and lucky I got accepted and kind of the rest is history.
So after you graduated, how long did you serve?
I served as a commissioned officer for a little over 5 years. So that was from 21, I was 21 years old when I graduated, deployed to Iraq at, I actually turned 22 in Kuwait on my way to Iraq. And so that was kind of interesting. And then I came back and I turned 23, which is kind of a weird thing to think. Like just for like a year of my life was just, it's, you know, I was in this other place. It was just kind of a weird thing to leave the States and then come back or go to a war zone and then come back. And I left when I was 21 and I came back 23. Kind of a weird thing, you know? So,
well, so much was, you know, paused for you as far as home life.
Yeah, totally.
It wasn't paused.
Yeah, no, man, that's exactly it. It was wild. And so after that, I got, you know, promoted to captain, ended up being a company commander of a headquarters airborne unit, was actually in the under the organization, the SOCOM organization, Special Forces Group. I was not tabbed, but I was the operations officer within our group support battalion. So anybody who's military probably understands what I'm talking about there. And then later, the company commander for the headquarters detachment. And so that was like a special forces, like within the special forces hierarchy. And that was like an airborne unit. So that was kind of cool because I got to jump out of a lot of things, helicopters, planes, all sorts of just nutty stuff. It was cool. It was like a good thing. And then, you know, at the end, it was like, I had really deeply considered, you know, making it a career. Like, I don't think anybody goes to West Point without thinking that. I can't imagine. Well, maybe there are. There's always an exception. But like, I wanted to be all in, but there was just something nagging at me. I felt like I had kind of hit like maybe a plateau. I was like, you know, if I keep going, it's like, okay, I become a major and that's like that's like an administrative job. And those jobs in the military, not necessarily fun.
Changes a lot.
Yeah, man. And then it's like, okay, so then I have to grind that out. And yes, I get the carrot at the end, you know, this idea of like retirement and that pay, but it was more like, I was more interested in doing something that challenged me And with the army or with the military in that capacity, it's not like I could just stay in a spot. Like, it's weird. I would have probably stayed as a platoon leader if I could have, because it was like at the, it's like at the highest level you can be where you're still on the ground, right? And, you know, in the action, so to speak. And so I was like, you know, but I need to move on. I need to grow. I need to go do other things. So I was like, well, I'm going to take a year off. I decided finally that I was going to take a year off. I was going to travel for a little bit of time, then maybe study and then go to law school or something like that was the initial idea. But of course, I started blogging at the same time, started podcasting, and all the stuff just blew up. And there was, there's no good reason for me to go back or go back to school, honestly. Like I created a lifestyle and I made enough money to make myself kind of like make that an unreasonable course of action, right? Like it just wouldn't make sense, which I know sounds weird.
Diversion.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny to look back on it.
Do you feel like there are any sort of, you know, lessons, habits, routines that you still hold on to today from your time in the service?
I am extremely high in orderliness. I am very, very clean and organized. And that, I make my bed. And I'm like my office, I try to keep it as meticulous as possible. But at the same time, I'm also high, and these are the traits I learned from that Jordan Peterson book. So I'm also high in trait openness. So I'm very open. I'm also very conscientious, very orderly. So I'm also open to creative and challenging new ideas and things like that. And so I keep my space really clean and organized. I use a calendar and I live by it. You know, so if somebody tries to like call me outside of something that's been scheduled on my calendar, it's like it's not going to happen, man. It's just that's not how I operate. And the thing is, it's because when I have those things scheduled out and I have things ordered, then I can work within that framework and do creative and challenging things. Otherwise, I know some people who are just, you know, very creative, entrepreneurial, great writers, artists, designers, whatever, and they can work in what seems like chaos. And I can't do that. I actually need kind of a structure framework around it. And then I can get after the chaos, if that makes sense. But I'd say, yeah, that's it. Orderliness. Yeah. And so I think that was something that was definitely, if not, it was something that was developed in the military, because like at West Point, it's like everything had to be clean. You know, you'd have to fold your white underwear in like, you know, five squares or something like this, right? And you know, then it would be inspected. It's like you never wear that underwear. It has to be sitting in a drawer with no dust in a particular form. You know what I mean? Like that kind of, it's like to a weird degree. I'm not encouraging people to do that, but that was a good experience for me to just be cognizant of my surroundings, making them clean. And then since I've become, say, kind of a full-time, you know, self-employed business owner, entrepreneur, I like to ensure that there's like in my workspace and then in the business I run, I'm really big on SOPs and operations. And so while I'm always trying new things and testing new things, it's like as soon as something works, I have this like deep need to create a structured SOP and process around it. I can recreate that. And I don't have to think about it. It's like my brain power has to go somewhere else. Like I'm always trying to go somewhere else and I'm going to forget what I did if I don't do that. So in a lot of ways, I think it's actually just me making up for maybe some of my own limitations, but that's worked really well for me.
Man, this is awesome. You kind of just echoed a lot of things that I've personally felt, but I haven't built the same structure around. So that's the takeaway for me.
Yeah.
So it's a game changer. Let's fast forward up to the present day. So today you do a lot of different things. You've got your own podcast, you know, you mentioned the blog, ton of writing that you've done over the past few years as well. Consulting projects where you get to work with incredible people. So how would you describe the makeup of Tom Marks Incorporated today?
Confusing from the outside, difficult to explain on a podcast, but I guess, you know, that's what's interesting. It's like all this stuff, we're all just winging it, aren't we? I don't know. I say that and somebody's listening. Winging it. But I feel like everything I've done has just been one experiment after another. I've been doing this now. I've been doing like full-time experimentation, if you will, for 5 years. We'll be going on six soon. And it's actually, that's a wild amount of time. And it's like, it actually makes me wonder if I could ever even get a job or if I could, because I've definitely been offered. But like, if I said yes to it, like if I could even, like what I would even do with myself, because I guess there's something about the nature of being completely open to do whatever I want. That's unlike anything else out there, which I guess this is why I'm such a big fan of like entrepreneurship personally, but also why I see such a great benefit of it for people who are doing it or side hustling, like doing some sort of side hustle. You have to do something on the side, even if it's not your full-time thing. I was side hustling this when I was in the Army to some degree. Like, I mean, I started with like real estate and I did a bunch of other like side hustle projects to get me kind of like mentally prepared for what I'm doing now. And anyway, I say that as a precursor, just to say that in terms of like the organization and structure, it's like, so I have my publishing company. We publish books and other kinds of like multimedia and stuff like that. I have like a consulting arm, as you mentioned. So I do some high level consulting with relatively well-known like personal brands and just business brands. People like Neil Patel and companies like Teachable, which I'm sure a lot of the listeners are familiar with. Right Message. John Lee Dumas. Yeah, I worked with him on the Freedom Journal launch campaign. His crowdfunding campaign did like close to $500,000. So like, okay, so there's a lot of that. So that's the consulting arm, which, and that itself is kind of confusing because it's hard to detail out, but it's because it's always like, it's concierge, right? It's and it's very custom. And so every time it's been different. It's like when I was working with Neil Patel, it was like, how do we hit the New York Times bestseller list? When it was John Lee Dumas, and we were trying to, it was like, how do we raise, well, at the time it was like, how do we raise like $100,000? From this crowdfunding campaign. And obviously we raised a lot more than that. For other campaigns, like, okay, how do we generate traffic? It's usually the same. It's like traffic, how do we get traffic leads to sales? And so usually I build that around some sort of like online event-based marketing campaign. So say, okay, that's why like, crowdfunding campaigns are so effective is because they have a start and stop date.
Yes,
and
exactly.
There's a reason for that. There's a reason there's crowdfunding websites. All of them have a start and stop date. Like there's no just like in perpetuity crowdfunding site that I know of. I mean, maybe there is. That'd be kind of weird. Yeah. But like
you need Patreon, which is like an ongoing contribution, but that's different.
Correct. It's slightly different, right? But that is a good comparison or good idea to kind of like compare these two. But it's something about crowdfunding. When you look at crowdfunding, you look at just any kind of launch, quote unquote, or what I call like these event-based marketing campaigns. There's a start and stop time. And the reason for that is I just feel like we're in such a, everybody's so busy and the marketplace or the competitive landscape, it's so crowded. It's not even really that you're like going up against like another company. I feel like a lot of people don't even feel like they are, like maybe at a certain level, but the level I don't necessarily speak to, like, cause I'm usually talking to startups and stuff like that. So I'm not really talking to the, Fortune 100 companies and this kind of stuff, but like the startup, it's not even that they're really competing against other companies. They're just competing for attention. That's it. So it's like, how do you get attention? And how do you do that without having to resort? Well, that's why you see clickbait headlines and things like that. That's why you see the proliferation of what is just like the self-destruction of like journalism, because there's this need, it's in this death spiral. It's like, because it's so crowded. It's like, well, if you know we create a headline like this, somebody's going to click on it. But then of course, then everybody starts doing it. This whole thing just kind of deteriorates. So it's like, how do we avoid that? How do we avoid that? I think Seth Godin calls it like the race to the bottom. So how do we avoid that? And how do we, still get the attention of our target audience or target customer? And so I think events are like the best way to do it. And then it gets a little more sophisticated from there, but that's kind of it in a nutshell.
I want to talk about some of these events or, maybe mm-hmm. if we want to single out one, but you mentioned a lot of big names, John Lee Dumas, Neil mm-hmm. Patel. I know you've done some stuff with, like Seth Godin, Andrew Warner from mm-hmm. Mixergy, Brennan Dunn with Right Message and Double Your Freelancing. You've really spread yourself out as far as types of people and types of companies, types of projects you've helped out with. So maybe like zooming in on one, call it the most interesting, the most fun, maybe your first one, whichever one you want to kind of focus on for a minute. Just do a little bit of a deep dive for us. Tell us about who it is, how you got involved, more importantly, because we've got a lot of people here listening today that also want to work with big names in their industry. So give us an overview of one.
I'll give you what I think is the most useful story, because I could tell stories for any one of these, and I don't, maybe there's different varying levels of utility, but I think this one actually has a lesson to it. And it's something I've shared every now and then, but a lot of people don't ask about it, unfortunately. So good question. But here it is. It's John Lee Dumas, the Freedom Journal. And so we did like this really massive crowdfunding campaign. For those who aren't familiar, we did the Freedom Journal was the product. It was a physical journal. Our goal was, it was actually under 100,000, but I think we were shooting internally for like 100,000, like as a stretch goal was like 150 or 200. We ended up doing about $450,000 in that 33-day period. And so it's actually, the story isn't about that, but how I was able to land that as like one of the major projects. And I think this is the same fundamental stuff is underneath like all of the different clients I've been able to get. It kind of starts at this point. Well, if you actually go back in time and you go to when I was getting out of the army my last year there, I'd started to blog on the side. I'd started to interview people and actually got situated for what is now my podcast, which didn't start at that time, but started a little bit after. But so I started doing all these things on the side. John had his podcast Entrepreneur on Fire and just started. So I started listening to it. I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, he's a military guy, he's an army guy, and he's killing it. So I reached out to him. I said, hi. And you know, that was kind of it. It was just like, hey, how's it going? We kind of stayed in touch very briefly via email. We kind of went back and forth, not much. But I kind of did that with everybody who I was kind of like admiring from a distance, like reaching out, saying hi, you know, thanking them for what they were doing. I was blogging. So if I could, I'd make reference to what they were doing and kind of share it because I thought it was good and inspiring. And then what I did was I tried to make a big piece of what I was doing was introductions. I wanted to be introduced to people as much as possible. And so I wanted to connect with people. And so I did go, you know, as an example, I went to a Seth Godin event when I was still in the Army over a weekend and went by myself, didn't know what I was doing there. I had no real business. I was just like curious, you know? And from there, it's wild to think that so many things kind of stemmed from it. But it's like, I met some people, they introduced me to some other people. Those people introduced me to some other people. Well, long story short, like through this series of introductions, and because I was blogging, you know, that's another thing. So you can't take it, it's not just the introductions, it's because I was also blogging. People saw I was doing something, even if poorly. It was like, oh, here's this young kid trying to do something, right? And Yeah, man. And even I say young, it doesn't matter if you're young, you'd be old. And it's like, if you actually see somebody doing something, you're more likely to give them the time of day. That was a big lesson. That's like light bulb number one. So if you're actually doing something, you can't just be talking about it or thinking about it. You can't just like pick people's brains. You have to be implementing things and doing things. And then if people see that you're doing things, hopefully, you know, as long as you're not doing them catastrophically wrong, then they may give you the time of day and they may give you advice. They may give you, because they see you're doing it. And then you know what? Implement it. So that's what I did. Well, one thing led to another. I got this introduction to Antonio Centeno, who's a Marine, and he runs Real Men, Real Style. Super interesting guy, actually. It would be great to have him. You should have him on your podcast if you get the chance. Really interesting story. And I connected with him, and it was at the time when I was transitioning. And so we had this conversation. It was like an hour-long conversation. He was like, kind of, what are you doing? He saw the blog I was doing. He was kind of curious. He's like, what are you trying to do here? I think that's a lot of my life has been categorized as people trying to figure out what I'm doing. You know, and I think that's my life too. I'm trying to figure it out too. And so at the time I was like, well, I don't know. I'm getting out of the army. You know, I just started this blog. I want to see where it goes. Maybe I'll go to law school afterwards, but I'm like in the interim, I'm like really interested in, just this space, blogging and podcasting, all these different things. And, so we had that conversation and he told me that he was like, hey, yeah, you know, one of the things I'm working on is this thing for veterans who are transitioning to help them, you know, succeed after they transition, maybe focusing on those specifically who want to build a business. Not necessarily online business, but he was like, I was like, that makes sense. I was like, that makes sense because I'm going through this process right now and it's not helpful at all. It's one size fits all. And the one size that they fit for is the person who's going to become a truck driver and more power to him. Like there's nothing wrong with that. But I was at this point in time, I'm not going to become a truck driver. It just not like the transportation game. The transition process in the military is not very useful. There's just not a lot to it. And so we had that conversation and I just kind of left. I said, oh, hey, well, if you do start that, you know, maybe there's just this, maybe I could, you know, write a guest post or I could do this other thing. It was kind of like, you know, an embarrassing ask. I don't think I knew what I was talking about. But he reached back out to me like a week later or even a few days later. He's like, you know, it was a great conversation, Tom, but you know, what I was really hoping you would do is actually like kind of volunteer to work with us on this. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay. What does that entail? Let's hop on another call and talk through it. And so that's where I connected with John Lee Dumas because he and John were already talking about doing this. But they didn't have the time. So they're both busy building what is now EO Fire, very successful, and Real Men, Real Style, very successful. Like Real Men's Real Style is like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, like men's fashion YouTube channels. And Entrepreneur Fire, obviously, you know, like one of the most successful podcasts out there. And so these guys were busy building those things, but they had this idea. They wanted to do this other project, but they didn't have time. So I was like, okay, I'll volunteer and I'll do it on a revenue share basis. So like if I perform, I get paid. And that's the big lesson learned. Long story to it, but I hope it paints the picture appropriately. It's like, be willing to seek out those kind of opportunities. And I think it's always worthwhile to at least consider working for a piece of the pie. because then somebody can take a chance on you. And I'm not saying work with anybody. It's like, I knew these guys were going places, you know, even where they were at, which was like, it was way more successful than I was at the time. But I was like, I know it's only going to get bigger for both of them. And sure enough, it has, because I just kind of knew, understood their dispositions and who they were. And I was like, I'd love to be able to learn from them. So what better way to learn from somebody than to be a partner on a project? And that was it.
Great distinction too. Like, yeah. You know, not just working for free to gain quote unquote experience, but doing a structured deal where it actually makes sense for you to invest those, which I'm sure were hundreds of hours producing that launch.
Yeah. And it was. And I guess that's the other thing, as I look at it now, I can't take on those types of projects anymore, really. But I'm not in a position where I need to, but even though actually part of me kind of would want to, like, I see some really interesting people. I'm like, if this was like 4 or 5 years ago, I would have just reached out to that person and said, here's how I can help. And I'm certain I can do it. And to prove it, it's like, you just split it with me on the back end, you know? And sure enough, it's like one thing after another, but I got to the point where it's like, I had enough success and I was making enough money. I was like, well, I'm just going to charge now for my time, you know, and then take a percentage or something like that. Right. And that's always been just an evolving process, but it's like, if you're just getting started or if you're doing something that's not really panning out the way you would hope, here's a couple of thoughts. One is, who's in the space doing something that you actually respect, a person that you admire and that maybe you would like to work with, maybe on a project. And so maybe you could reach out to them, find something that they're doing and where you could invest your time and energy into making it better. And so that, because that's the limitation for these people who are crushing it, right? It's time. They don't have the time. That's it. Like, otherwise they'd take advantage of every opportunity, right? It's not because they don't lack the skill or the competence. It's time. And so if they're running like an organization or a business or something like that, it's really rare to see somebody try to run multiple businesses. And it's even rare just for somebody to run one business, one successful business. And so that's where their time and energy is put. But if you could say, hey, I can come in and I could complement this, or I could do this other thing, and the thing is, you're not forcing it on them. Like, I would say that's another thing. I was listening. I was listening to what was out there. I was reading what people are tweeting and their blogs on their newsletters. I was paying attention. And I then saw when people would say something like this. So I had this idea, obviously that call with Antonio, totally missed it. But since then I learned my lesson. I was like, okay, cool. Because I didn't want to be presumptuous. I didn't think I had anything to add at the time, but it turns out I did. I had time and I wanted to learn. I had time. I wanted to learn. I was willing to invest that time to learn and to hopefully make a profit on the back end. And then of course, yeah, what a great way to build up a skill set too. So I really can't emphasize that enough for somebody just getting started. Look for those opportunities to contribute and help. And if you can be like a force multiplier for somebody, then let them know that. But you can't be generic. You have to be specific. Like, there has to be a specific thing that you can come in and do. You can't just say, hey, how can I help you? That's useless. That creates I look at it as like energy burden. It's like, so if something takes, you want to always be the person who takes away the energy burden from somebody else. So like, if you ask a question like, how can I help you? It's like the energy burden is now placed on them. They have to think through that problem. But if you say, hey, you're doing this with your website, like you're running these ads, I've seen them. And I thought maybe we could, or I saw this on your landing page. This could get borderline presumptuous because you don't know how they're performing per se. But like, if you do see something and you could say, hey, I'd love to be able to, maybe I could write up a bunch of new copy for you that I think would better tap into your market and we could run those ads. Or I could rewrite the sales page for you. Or here you go, I've already rewritten. Or I heard you talk about this in an email newsletter on Twitter that you'd like to do something like this. What if I took the reins on it, and did XYZ? So now all of a sudden you're taking away that energy burden and so they can just say yes or no to it. So I think that's an important kind of asterisk there as well. When you are reaching out to people, like don't just become the person who's like kind of needy and wants to, that person, you can kind of smell them from a mile away, right? But if you can actually genuinely contribute, it's like worthwhile. Look where you can contribute, see where you can add value and see who you could collaborate with. I think it's the fastest path to whatever you want to do in life.
Yeah. I mean, I second that. I get a lot of emails that are sort of in that open-ended camp. And it's an energy expenditure for me to come up with like, here's something that I need help on. But you can't really connect those dots when you don't know what the person's doing. So I always advise weaving in an element of, context and slight pitch too.
Yes.
Like, first of all, okay, great. You have the time or the experience maybe to help me out with this project, but why? Why should I?
Well, what's interesting, thinking of you, Ryan, too, And maybe I saw something, I think it was on Twitter. You're like, hey, I'm getting X amount of traffic per month to my website. And I need to figure out a way to monetize it. And I think I reached out to you. I was like, hey man, let's just hop on a call and talk through this. Because if you're getting that kind of traffic, there's like 100 different things you could do. And in this capacity, I'm not actually trying to, you know, to work any kind of angle. It was just like genuinely, I actually know I can answer that question. But you know, what's interesting is like, even if I was like maybe kind of hoping to work an angle, what a perfect way to work it. Because then I could say, you've mentioned this need. Here's a way you could monetize it or make more money from that traffic without doing like, you know, Google ad network display ads or something like that, right? Something that actually makes you real money. Here's what it would take. Like if I were pitching you on it, like I probably would have gotten more in depth than just say, hey, let's hop on a call and talk through it because we know each other. But you know what I mean? Like that would be the perfect opportunity. Because if somebody was like, hey man, here's what I'll do. I could do these 10 things for you. And what we could do is you don't charge anything. I'll do all of them for you. You don't have to do anything. I'll just ask you some questions and then I'll implement and do everything. And then we'll split. I'll just get a percentage on the back end. Like you're going to be, you might say no.
Blessing and pitching.
Right. You might say no, but it's like, at least if you say no, it's not like an offended no, right? You're like, no, but maybe there's room for something in the future. Kind of no. Like I never mind getting rejected. What I don't want to do is hopefully, and you know, it always happens. Like if you do a lot of outreach and stuff like that, you do a lot of reaching out to people. You know, you want to, as much as possible, you don't want to burn bridges. Right. So like if I get a no from somebody,
those are okay, but you don't want to burn a relationship.
Completely. That's it. So that's why it's like, it's okay to get rejected. Just make sure that the rejection is like that kind of nuanced no, where it's like, okay, maybe the door's still open for something in the future. So you didn't just come off annoying. And who knows, maybe you still, but things beyond that. It's like, don't even think about coming off annoying. It's like, if I can be helpful, here's how I can be helpful. And then you don't have to think about if you were annoying or not, I think. Maybe, because I feel like at least me, maybe a little bit neurotic in that regard. I do kind of wonder, I was like, I don't want to come off annoying or presumptuous or all these different things. I think a lot of people feel that's those same things. And then that leads them to just not trying. But I think if you come from a place of goodwill and like good faith and wanting to add value, and sure, wanting to capture a part of it, but like starting with the presupposition that you will actually increase the person's value overall, so that whatever you make from it is like marginal, but they're way better off, then I don't think any no that comes from that is a bad no. So that's that.
Oh man, I agree with you completely. But Tom, I'm going to transition over to a couple of my frequently asked questions now as we're getting toward the end of this interview. So first up for you, what would be your number one best piece of advice to someone who's listening today and they have a side project, but they want to take it to a full-time business? What should they be focusing on?
They should set a time limit, some kind of time frame to execute some sort of like marketing campaign and to reach some sort of like revenue. Amount is like maybe a good revenue is okay. It's not like the end all be all. Profit is like obviously the best thing, but it's a little harder to compute. But like maybe what's in their purview or what would seem more reasonable is like a certain amount of revenue or sales or something like that. And I say it has to be money related is I guess the first piece of that. So set a time, some point in the future here, maybe like 3 to 6 months that you're going to run some sort of campaign and that you want and you intend to make a certain volume of sales and revenue. And write that down and then do it. I mean,
I like
that's literally it.
Challenge.
Because I think a lot of people, you have to, because otherwise it's like, well, maybe I'll try out this. Because people talk about experimentation and experimenting and testing things. And I do too. And I've read a lot of lean startup, you know, ideas and they sound kind of cool. But the reality is like, if you don't time box it, then it's kind of useless. It's like, the thing you are measuring, whatever important metric it is actually not a useful metric. It's like a vanity metric. And again, revenue could be, but if you're just kind of getting started, I don't think revenue is. It's like if you generate sales and if you produce revenue, that's a validation of something, at least in the beginning. Then you can work on things like, well, how do I increase the margin? The next thing I'm going to do is optimize for profit. So how do I do that? How do I start solving for that problem? So that's the thing. It's like ask better questions and you'll get better answers. So I think the puzzle you need to solve is how do I make X amount of revenue within this time window in this many months in the future on these specific dates? And you can't, that's why it shouldn't be like a tomorrow type thing. It's like, then you have some months to think about it. Not think about it. You have maybe a week or two to think about it, but then you should move into implementation and execution. But the thing is, I say 3 to 6 months, like these things take time. Like, it's a very rare person to be able to just throw something out there and it works. And you could, but I think, you know, a lot of people who do that, you'd be surprised. It's the survivorship bias, right? We see the people who have succeeded doing something like that and we're like, oh, that's what I should do. Just throw things out there and see what happens. What you're not seeing are all the people who fail doing just that, which is throwing things out there. And so I know that's kind of like, I hope that's not a contradictory point. It's like, you should test things, but you should do it with the full force of your brain and your energy. And so put the time horizon about 3 to 6 months out. That's plenty of time to run a campaign for something and then start moving toward it. Because if you just say, well, I want to make $1,000 next week. It's like, you might not make it. And if you don't, what have you learned? I don't think anything, honestly. And if you do hit it, well, maybe you've learned something. I don't know. Because chances are you just threw something in the wall. But if you're 3 to 6 months out on a project, you could kind of be methodical about it. Say, here's what I'm planning to do to reach this amount of sales and generate this amount of revenue. And here are the things I think need to happen. And all of a sudden you're just going to be, oh, you know, the person who can pull that off too is so much more valuable as like an employee, even if you just like wanted a you know, increase in pay or something like that, or work on a team that was doing this kind of stuff. It's like the person who can like take an idea from, you know, or go from idea to reality with something like this is, man, your market value is just increased. So anyway, I don't want to get into a tangent there, but that's what I would do.
I love it. No, that's awesome advice. Tom, this is going to be my last question for you. What's been the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of time, money, tools, product, services, education, or otherwise.
I think at this point, I think starting a podcast, it's weird because it's not like something I'm not teaching it or selling it. And there are people who do it and like go follow them, like John, like he teaches a course and it's like, listen to him and follow his instructions. It's not about because the podcast made money directly. In fact, that was never my intention. I thought about, well, that'd be kind of cool maybe to be able to sell advertising on it or to get it sponsored. But pretty quickly, I kind of let that fade away. And I said, no, you know, I don't care about that. The reason I started in the first place was I just wanted to talk to interesting people who I admired and I wanted to learn from. And it actually, the way I started it was just publishing the MP3 on my blog. It was like, it was such a sloppy, silly way to do it. And then it was actually Jeff Goins, who's like the, I don't know, third or fourth person I interviewed. He's like, you should turn this into a proper podcast. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. That was back in like 2012, 13. And man, it's insane what's happened since, which is not even the biggest podcast in the world. Most people haven't heard of it. And that's what I think is so wild about it. You don't have to be the most well-known for a podcast to just serve you in so many different ways. Like probably 50% of my clientele have been podcast guests. Mm-hmm. You know,
so it's like, other purposes.
You got it, man. That's the big thing. It's like, not only do I learn from them, but I've now established a relationship. If I reach out to them, we kind of, I won't say buddies, but we're at least good acquaintances. I've started by serving them first. Because even if I have a small audience, I'm still serving them by interviewing them and spreading their gospel, so to speak, right? That's actually useful for a lot of people, except for maybe the biggest names who just would just ignore you. But any, you know, a lot of other people see it as like, you doing them a favor in a lot of ways, and it should be that. So that's a good way to start a relationship. And so not only have I gotten clients from it, well, that's the big things, like clients and then all these other doors that have opened up, like invisible doors that have opened because of having the podcast that I would have never predicted. And that's the thing. It's like this weird thing. I would suggest doing it because...
I second that.
Yeah, man, it's wild. You probably have the same experience. And I don't know why, but it happens. And anybody can do it. It's like the barrier to entry is it's zero almost. I mean, you have to buy some basic equipment, but anybody could start a podcast. I'm actually kind of blown away more people don't have podcasts because it's not by any means super saturated either. Like you can go really deep into a subject that hasn't been touched yet. And that's a value, you know? And so you don't have to think, well, there's, you know, somebody's been set on all these different topics. It's like, not quite, man. Like there's so much more room for you to serve your listeners and other ways that you can provide value. But yeah, I'll leave it at that.
I love it. Man, this is an awesome point to wrap up on. But Tom, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you and everything you're up to?
Just go to Ryan's show notes for this episode. So what will that be, Ryan? Is it just ryrob.com?
We'll be at ryrob.com/podcast.
Head over there. That's it, man.
Tom, all right. Well, thank you again for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Ryan.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating.
And as always, you can catch every episode of The Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.